Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. New England weather is not for the faint-hearted. Through the course of the year, we might have blizzards, nor'easters, tropical storms, and even a tornado may pass through. For those along the coast, wind and precipitation, along with tidal variation, creates another element of impact. Today, we talk about some of the significant weather events our region has seen, and with a changing climate, what we should be prepared for in the future. Joining us is Don Wilding. He's journalist, historian, and author of four books on Cape Cod. His latest is Historic Storms of Cape Cod. Don, welcome.
Thank you, Minty. Great to be here.
Also with us, meteorologist Harvey Leonard. He's had a 50-year career in meteorology, forecasting weather in New England for 45 of those years. He's currently meteorologist emeritus at Channel 5. Welcome, Harvey. Good to see you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So, Don, weather is everywhere. Everybody's always talking about weather, right? So, but it seems that we have some of the more dramatic weather events. What piqued your interest in New England weather, and when did you realize you had enough to put together this book?
Well, I've always had quite an interest in weather, dating back to when I was a kid, growing up in northern New Jersey. But once I came to New England and I started seeing the weather up here, it was a whole nother level, you know, with the different types of storms you can get hit with. And the blizzard of 78 was actually a big factor. I was a senior in high school when that happened. And I watched it with great interest, not only in New Jersey where we had a foot and a half of snow, but I was watching what was going on up here, knowing I was headed this way. And it was, I couldn't believe it. I just was following it very closely, especially when I had heard about the Outermost House going out to sea. And at the time, I had no idea what the Outermost House was. But following that whole storyline, I eventually became interested in the Outermost House many years later. And as many people know, that's the Blizzard of 78 is what washed that landmark house away. So I had written a book called Henry Beston's Cape Cod back in 2013, and that grew into I took that storyline, and I started writing more books on Cape Cod history, and there were always seemed to be storms in there, whether I was writing about shipwrecks, and then I wrote a book about the Cape Cod and what happened with the Portland Gale of 1898. So with all of that, And I'd been doing some programs, too, on storms, particularly the Blizzard of 78. And then people would start suggesting, hey, throw this in. Put this storm. What about this storm? Next thing you know, I have all this material.
Yeah. And you have the old-timers going, it's Blizzard of 78. Never. How about Carol and some of these other big hurricanes?
That's right. Yeah.
So, Harvey, what piqued your interest in weather, and why did you pursue a career in meteorology?
Well, I actually have some similarities to Don. I'm not a native New Englander. I grew up in the Bronx, New York, and I was always fascinated by storms, all kinds of storms. For me, the order was winter storms, number one, tropical storms and hurricanes, number two, severe thunderstorms and tornadoes, number three. But all kinds of weather, and especially all kinds of storms, piqued my interest. And whenever there was the threat of a snowstorm as a little kid, I couldn't focus on anything else. And now all these decades later, I still can't forecast on it, really concentrate on anything else when there's a threat or an ongoing winter storm. So just something in the blood, hard to explain, but it's there.
And the Cape and Islands are, of course, part of New England, but our geography here, we're surrounded by water, which also makes us unique. Talk about how this region's geography influences weather and seasons. I think like right now we're looking at temperatures, you know, inland a little bit higher because we have this cool water that the breeze is coming off of. So, Harvey, talk a little bit about that. I know people always get so annoyed on the Cape. We're like, we're not Boston. We don't have Boston weather.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it. It's one of, you know, all the years being on television, one of the most common, you know, emails I'd receive would be from folks on the Cape, you know, hey, you know, don't forget about us. And I understand. And you know, I think I've always done my best, of course, to include that, emphasize it. And, you know, we're at a time of the year now. Of course, now we're moving toward Memorial Day weekend. But whenever you have a wind component off the ocean in the spring, and that's going to happen, obviously, a lot of the time on the Cape, it just can't be warm because the ocean is cool and it takes a body of water, especially one as large as the Atlantic Ocean, it takes longer to heat up a body of water than a body of land. So the land areas are way ahead of coastal areas in terms of warming during the springtime. So anytime there's a component off the water of wind, it just can't be that hot. And so that's what happens. And but if we can get a true west to northwest wind, a wind coming from the west northwest, then the Cape, most of the Cape, can be as warm or even warmer than the rest of the area. But that doesn't happen that often at this time of the year.
Yeah, and then, but on the flip side, in the fall, when everybody's getting a little cooler and we have the warm water, we have some pretty nice weather going into the fall that you see elsewhere. And of course, ocean currents, again, like the Gulf Stream, also impact our weather, right?
Absolutely, of course. Sometimes they're, an attraction for a track of a storm, a fierce storm. Not always, it's more complicated than that. But yes, there's no question about it. The Gulf Stream is extremely important.
Yeah. When did we start keeping weather-related records? And I'm wondering about, severe weather. Most of the native people didn't keep written records, right, Don? But you, in the book, you talk about the colonial hurricane of 1635 briefly. How far back did you find records?
Before the Portland Gale, it's really kind of hard to find a lot of details. I mean, you have to go into the newspapers, and even then, before that, there wasn't a lot. You have to look really hard, and you're not going to find much in the way of photographs either back then. But after, once you got into the 20th century, yes, it became a lot easier, I think, to find these records of the storms and what happened. The Portland Gale, especially, had. There was a lot of coverage, even though it took them several days to put it together at that point because the Cape was shut off completely. But it did come together finally with that.
Which of ship logs, I mean, but that's not
ship logs
necessarily,
is
yeah,
yeah,
would
that
be.
can too. That can play into it a little bit more for the shipwrecks and for the life-saving service and things like that. But that's kind of, yeah. That's further back you go, the harder it is to find anything.
All right. So you start the book with the hurricane of 1938. That's perhaps the most infamous storm right here and that hit this region. I wonder if that's also because we have images and personal accounts of the storm. What kind of sources did you use to research the storm of 38? Which, by the way, none of us were around for that.
I found a lot of, mostly through newspapers, in that. And there were a lot of great descriptions of what happened, even right here, where we're sitting, practically. There was, out in the street here, there was 8 feet of water. So that was very well detailed in the Falmouth Enterprise, and several other newspapers. So they stayed on top of it pretty well. I couldn't believe how well the Falmouth Enterprise covered some of these hurricanes, particularly that one.
Yeah. Harvey, the hurricane of 38 caught almost everybody unaware. What kind of forecasting tools were available in the late 1930s, and how challenging would it have been to predict a storm like that? And we've come a long way with technology.
Oh, absolutely. Very challenging. I mean, I think if you go back in those days, most of the storms that would find themselves where this one did, off the coast of North Carolina, would curve to the northeast, kind of going around the rear end, so to speak, of the Bermuda High, and would pass out to sea south. But that's just based on, you don't have computer models back in those days. And that was just really around the time we're first starting to figure out that to really forecast the weather on the ground, you really have to know what's going on thousands of feet above us in terms of wind direction, speed, moisture, temperature. And so it really wasn't until we started to get these upper air weather reports and then could put them into a computer model and then run the math and physics. And of course, it would take forever when this really started to happen in the 50s, with the first computers. And of course, it's a whole different world now with computer processing power so much faster and with our network of observations and with weather satellites able to measure sea surface temperature. So it's a whole different world. But the problem with that 38 storm, just expecting it to do what any other storm or most other storms like that would have done, curve out to sea, 6 hours later, it's upon us, like moving like a freight train, caught in a very strong south to north jet stream aloft, coming northward at 60 miles an hour. So it goes from off the coast of Cape Hatteras right on into Long Island, and then an hour later into the southern coast of New England, 6 to 8 hours later, no warning, virtually, and that's an impossible situation.
And of course, that storm coincided with astronomically high tide, so people were swept away along with their houses and their cars. And Don, you talk about some of those stories in the book.
Yeah, it was there was the way the storm lined up. It was just a perfect situation for the storm surge to come, just driving right into Buzzards Bay, and it was so anywhere from 18 to 25 feet on this storm surge. So the water came, and when it comes into Buzzards Bay that quickly, there's nowhere for it to go. And that led to several houses being swept away and or heavily damaged. There was one house where five people were inside. This was in Bourne, Gray Gables area, and it just swept the house away into the canal. And the house ended up at the base of the Bourne Bridge. And the picture of the thing sitting there in the water, they had to recover the bodies from out from the hole in the roof afterwards. So that was just one particular situation. But it was deadly. There was a lot of water in the streets here in, in Falmouth and over in Wareham and all across the Cape, but this area got hit the worst, and it was mostly because of where it was concentrated.
Hard to even imagine when you say 8 feet of water outside here. I mean, just like that visual, it's so hard to imagine. And Harvey, you're talking about the advances in technology, and I'm just thinking back, back when we didn't know that much, and there were some forecasters who just seemed to have a knack, right? Maybe they just really know the area that they're, that they're living in, and I think that's true even today, even with all of like the satellite stuff. I'm just thinking of your forecasting. There have been times when you've said, "Well, it says this, but I kind of feel like maybe it's gonna go over here." How much intuition do you use in your forecasting?
There's a lot, even still to this day. And, when you really think back, I would say, for TV weather, Don Kent was definitely the first one. And Don, being a native New Englander, loving weather, having it truly in his blood. And I could say the same for Bob Copeland. Don Kent was on WBZ, Bob Copeland on WCVB. They were great. And they definitely would, use tons of intuition, their past experience, their knowledge of the local area, being native New Englanders. So that always comes into play, and it still does. Maybe not to the extent it did many decades ago, so that these days, if you were to watch a television weather forecast and you were shopping around different stations, you're probably not going to see the range of difference that you could have seen many decades ago, where you could see one station, the meteorologist saying, "I think the storm's going to be out to sea, a winter storm, no snow." And another station, perhaps 6 to 12 inches of snow. What's going on here? But that's pattern recognition. And I used a lot of that in my career. So you kind of build up a mental encyclopedia as you go along. And then you can call upon that. And if something happens, you didn't get it quite right, and you say, when I see that situation the next time, it's not going to get me. And that may help you out, in the next storm.
Yeah. We're talking weather this morning. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to share some thoughts on weather with us, or maybe the storm you remember best. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking weather this morning. With us is Don Wilding. He's a journalist, historian, and author of four books on Cape Cod. His latest is Historic Storms of Cape Cod. Also with us, Harvey Leonard. He's a 50-year career in meteorology. He's currently meteorologist emeritus at Channel 5. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Got an email from Captain Richard who says, "My cousin had chosen the weekend of Hurricane Bob for his wedding. So I left my ship in New York City and came to Wellfleet. When Bob struck, a tree fell on the roof of my grandmother's house where I was staying. Later, when I returned to the ship and sailed for Boston, our passage took up Buzzards Bay to the canal. I was struck by how the salt spray from the hurricane had turned all the tree leaves in sight from the water brown. Not a green leaf in sight. And that was later in September. I think many of our listeners remember Hurricane Bob, which was the last and hopefully one we don't see for a long time. I also got married right after Hurricane Bob, right here in Woods Hole. That was in 1991. And I remember just before Bob, I thought, and the trees. I mean, we got married at Church of Messiah, and all the relatives coming from out of town. We had this beautiful little map along the shore to, you know, the reception, and the road was all ripped up. I thought, oh my gosh, how are they going to ever have this cleaned up? And they did. I mean, not the road, but the church, the grounds, the trees were all. But I think a lot of people, what they remember about Hurricane Bob after were the mad bees.
Yeah, I recall that too. And not just here on the Cape, off Cape as well. I remember getting stung myself from that. But yeah, it was a case, I believe, of the nests just being blown out by the hurricane. And it was a relatively dry summer, as I recall. And next thing you know, we've got these nests are all destroyed. Well, these bees are wasps, actually. Yeah. They're yellow jackets. They were not happy.
Yeah. What do you remember about Hurricane Bob, Harvey?
I remember that as well, because I remember being down there after the storm, and right along Falmouth Heights, what was the seawall, blocks of concrete on the road. Unbelievable, because I think we all realize, obviously, any Cape Codder does, there are not many forces in nature stronger than rushing ocean water. Mm-hmm. And obviously, when you do that and take a seawall, solid concrete seawall, and then turn it into chunks and just blocks of concrete displaced, that takes unbelievable force and fury. And, you know, one of the things always with these storms, the track naturally, the intensity, and then the timing. When they coincide with high tide, the peak of the storm surge, that's when, of course, the coastal flooding can be devastating. That happened with Bob. Now with Gloria, which was September 27th, 1985, yes, the track was farther west, so that was certainly a difference. It was actually a very similar track to the hurricane of 38. Fortunately, we didn't have the degree of devastation that we had from 38. But Hurricane Gloria struck at low tide, and so there was not that much coastal flooding. But Hurricane Bob struck at high tide. And of course, Falmouth, southeastern Mass, the Cape, mm-hmm. being on the right side of that storm, you have the forward motion of the storm from south to north, and that adds more impetus and momentum. The wave action is from south to north, and the forward speed of the storm, as it starts to accelerate, compounds that whole situation.
Yeah. And we were like, that was what barely a Category 1, right? And you just think about it now, even with, you know, so much more building, the devastation of a hurricane now would just be so much greater.
Yeah, I talked about that in the book a little bit, how we're probably due not just for a hurricane, but we're due for what is going to be a major hurricane. We're talking.
You stop that right now.
Probably 1938. This is Glenn Field from the Weather Service and I had this conversation last year. And this is what he was saying. Ugh. It's not a question of if.
It's when, I know.
It's when.
Yeah. Now, we say the hurricane of 38. When did we start naming storms?
It was 1953 is when they began giving them the actual names. I believe they used a phonetic type of system of naming them from 1950 until 1953. There was actually a hurricane called Hurricane Dog in 1950 that passed just to the east of the Cape, and it did a lot of damage, but not in the league of, because it missed us. It was not as bad, but still, that's it was 1953, and then I believe it was 1979 when they started adding men's names to it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Why do they always have to be women's names, right? All right.
So, well, you know, it's interesting, you know, you raise that because it lets us know in some ways how times have changed, because I may be wrong. I don't know. I wasn't in on it. Okay.
Hmm.
But, why would the names only be female at first? I think it's an old, ridiculous stereotype, that, oh, gee, women are a little more fickle than men, maybe a little more complex, maybe a little smarter to be sure. But anyway, finally, that did change. But yeah, it is very interesting when you think back.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We got another tropical storm in 1944. Tell us a little bit about that one, Don.
Well, the Great Atlantic Hurricane of 1944. This was another intense hurricane that ended up doing substantial damage, but not nearly the amount of life, loss of life that occurred with 1938. The reason for that primarily was for 1938, nobody was prepared. Mm-hmm. 1944, everybody was prepared. They were much better. They had put many more systems in place where they were able to track the storm a little bit better. And so when it was all said and done, I don't believe there was any loss of life right here on the Cape, and if it was, it was minimal. But it did end up taking out the Vineyard Lightship, mm-hmm. where all 12 men on board were killed. Now you can imagine these lightships were huge and anchored.
It was anchored off of Cutty Hunk.
Yeah, right. And it was ordered to stay in place for this storm. And they didn't have a chance. Mm-hmm. They eventually were just overcome by the waves. It broke off, and finally the divers went down a few weeks later and saw what happened. But that was the 1944 storm. It didn't impact Falmouth as heavily as 38 did. But it did. It hit Dennis much harder. There was substantial damage in Dennis at the Lighthouse Inn on West Dennis Beach, where the Stone family had just purchased it right around the time of the 38 hurricane. Well, they had just in June of 1944, they had added a whole new dining area, a whole new dining room and everything on the side of the building. And then the storm hit. It swept that entire new addition over that beach at West Dennis Beach into Weir Creek in back of it. So that just gives you an idea of how powerful the storm was. And it did substantial damage in Provincetown, too. In fact, the Provincetown Advocate said that the 44 hurricane made the 38 hurricane look like a pleasant zephyr.
Oh, my. Yeah. Now, and we'll talk a little bit about how the Boston papers reported on the 1944 storm, post-storm.
It was both of them, 38 and 44, mm-hmm. where they greatly, greatly exaggerated what happened, or just flat out inaccurate mm-hmm. reporting as to what happened here on the Cape. There was reports of martial law being happening in Provincetown. There was also a case of where, especially after 38, that Provincetown had been wiped off the face of the map. It was gone. There were police stopping people in Wellfleet, saying, "Turn around, go back. Provincetown's gone."
And clearly made up because, where did they get that?
Yeah. And eventually it got to the point where some town officials, I think it was actually the Town Criers Association in Provincetown, called up WBZ and said, "Hey, we're still here." So they had to just kind of let everybody know, no, this isn't correct.
Yeah.
So, it eased a lot of people, their minds off Cape.
Yeah. And there was a considerable amount of cleanup. Talk about the work of the German prisoners housed at Camp Edwards and the cleanup efforts there.
Yeah, they had to they had a big job. There were so many downed trees following that storm. So they actually enlisted the aid of these prisoners of war that were being held at Camp Edwards. And they were all over the Cape, basically, utilizing bandsaws, cutting up this wood for lumber. Mm. And so if anybody prospered, it was, you know, people using the lumber. But that was just one of the many stories behind that whole storm, yeah.
Harvey, what do you think? I mean, it's been 1991 was the last hurricane with Hurricane Bob, as we talked about. Do you feel like, as Don's saying, it's just a matter of time when we get another one, right? So do you feel like people take it seriously when there hasn't been one in a long time? Is the preparation what it should be?
I think that's one of the biggest concerns. When, you know, you made the statement that, you know, most, well, the three of us, but most of the population was not alive for the hurricane of 1938. And I think especially younger people, maybe middle-aged people today, don't really realize, heaven forbid, what a replay of that would look like. Because, you know, people now, even after terrible storms, you know, they think, okay, 2 hours later, I can go to the mall, you know, or something like that. I go to the Cape Cod Mall, for example. But I think that the problem is that the extent of power outages alone would be, if you took the track and intensity of the hurricane of 38 and replayed that, God forbid, we don't want to see that. I mean, you'd have massive power outages through all of New England, all the way on up into eastern Canada. It would be such a vast aerial coverage that it would take so long, you know, to repair everybody, because you'd have all the massive tree damage to try to get out of the way before you could really, you know, repair all the lines. So I really think that is one of the problems. And Don alluded to this also. When you think about all these factors, okay, the factors that our ocean waters are several degrees warmer now, that is more fuel for the storms. That's energy, all right? Any type of warmer world is a wetter world as well, because warm air holds more moisture than cold air. So now you have the ability to produce heavier amounts of rain, fresh water flooding. Now you have the potential for even stronger winds, which means more damage due to wind. And you have the potential for a higher storm surge, which means more inundation, coastal flooding, beach erosion. So when you add all of that and think about the number of structures along the coast, the number of people living along the coast here on the Cape and elsewhere along the coastline, you can see why there is such concern going forward. The one thing we do have, though, is such vast communication ability, you know, through internet, TV, cable, and, you know, you can go on and on, that at least people are going to get the message. Whether they take it seriously, it's up to, you know, people who do and did what I did. And of course, you know, the great books that Don has written, hopefully people, obviously, as many as possible, read them and they learn a lot and they become aware of the danger. And hopefully they'll do the right things and the best things they can do before a storm hit. We would know about it.
Yeah.
There would be warning. It wouldn't come as a surprise in that sense.
And the power of the sea. Sea captains knew better than anybody else. You ever see a sea captain build their house on the water?
No,
never.
They built
never.
Far away.
Yeah.
But everybody else has built
yeah.
on the water,
right.
Especially since the last hurricanes. That run of hurricanes we had during the 20th century, well, now it's been 30 years. There's been an awful...
That's a lot of building, I know.
A lot of building along the coast.
Yeah.
Now, imagine what happens if 1938 comes along again.
Yeah, we're in a lot
what
of
will
trouble.
Happen?
And we're talking about New England weather here, but Harvey, look around the world, the severe weather we're seeing. I mean, look at all the tornadoes right now. Was it in Iowa yesterday? I felt so bad for these people. There was one guy who lived in this house for 50 years and just flattened this... this whole neighborhood, and you know the fires that we're seeing. I was in Canada, of course. That air impacts us. Severe weather is a factor. It's a reality.
It is. I mean, there's no question, and I think climate change and a warming climate is definitely playing into it for some of the reasons that you know I noted. We also should note that the ability to see what's going on in low populated areas around the country, not that they always hit low populated areas, they can hit anywhere with severe weather and tornadoes and so on. But we see it now, okay? And, decades ago, we wouldn't see much. We might not have known it happened. If it's, if it's out in the woods somewhere, nobody may have ever known or had any video. So there is the ability now to show it. So hopefully people, see it. And of course, it's disturbing. It can be shocking, but it also can be informative if, taken in the best way, as a source of education, and realize, obviously what these storms can do. But you're seeing the video, and it can, on the other hand, it can lead you to think, oh my gosh, every day another part of the country is getting it. Now, to some extent, that was always the case, but we wouldn't see it.
Wouldn't see it,
Okay. So both factors are in play here. Okay, there is a warming climate, and that does make more weather extremes. And those are obviously going to be costly in terms of property and, also the risk of loss of life, which is always number one. Property is number two that we're always concerned with.
Betsy writes, I was 10 years old living near Falmouth Harbor, she's talking about Hurricane Carol. We were returning from a boat trip and listening to the radio. Don Kent was forecasting the weather, and he said he didn't like the look of the storm, and after the broadcast, he was going home to pull his boat. So my father and brothers put the boat on the mooring with extra lines and chafing gear, and we pulled our Beetle Cat and moved our 210 to a protected cove with extra lines. And I remember the excitement of coming downstairs the next morning saying, today we are having a hurricane. We went out during the eye of the storm to adjust the lines and move the 210. We were lucky we didn't lose a boat. However, my father felt guilty that he didn't spread the word to the other boat owners. So thanks for that, Betsy. Harvey, the National Weather Service not only has to make weather predictions, they also have to disseminate that information to the public in a way that we can understand. So today, the Weather Service has specific words and language to talk about weather. We have storm watch, storm warnings. When did we begin to adopt this terminology? And I think as weather forecasters and meteorologists, you try to explain to people what that means. What's the difference between a storm watch and a storm warning? And, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, a watch means the potential is there. A warning means it's imminent. But I will say this. There are people, I had an intern, he's a number of years back. He's now a PhD, and he's working. This is the area he's working on, both severe weather and communicating it in the sense that, social behavior, because you want people to clearly understand the information and, when necessary, take appropriate action. So there's always reevaluation going on in the National Weather Service about, the watches, the warnings. Is there a better way to state this, communicate it? So, we'll see tweaking along those lines as we go. But the general thing is, a watch means the potential is there. Please pay attention and stay updated. A warning means things are much more imminent.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about some of the significant weather events in our region with Don Wilding, journalist, historian, author of four books on Cape Cod. His latest is Historic Storms of Cape Cod. Also with us is meteorologist Harvey Leonard. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Stan in Truro writes, talking about the movie called All Hail, a very funny Argentine movie is about a weatherman whose life is totally upended due to a missed prediction of a hailstorm. Are you aware of any stories where forecasters have taken personal grief due to missed calls, other than the usual grumbling about storms outsmarting us all?
I'm not.
What do you think, Harvey?
Not directly, anyway.
Yeah. I think Harvey's frozen there a second. We're going to get Harvey back. Dan will get Harvey back. That Hurricane Carol in 54, Betsy was just talking about, was very similar to the hurricane of 38 in terms of its track and coinciding with high tide, right?
Right, yeah. They referred to it as a twin storm almost with Carol. It was a Category 3 when it hit, and it took a very similar path. Might have been a little closer to us, actually. But that was the first of two hurricanes that year. Within, I think it was 12 days.
Wow.
Carol, and then was followed by Edna. almost an equally powerful storm. So that's you know, within not even two weeks of each other having hurricanes.
Yeah. Boy, you think about it, we're so lucky we haven't had one since.
We are very fortunate.
I know. Crazy. Evacuating the Cape and Islands during the summer would just be impossible, a nightmare, right? But if we were in the crosshairs of a major storm, there would be locations that, you know, would have to be evacuated, thinking areas around Buzzards Bay, south-facing areas along Nantucket Sound. Harvey, how much lead time are meteorologists able to provide as you track a storm and predict timing? Because we know timing of tides can make all the difference in storm surge, right? And I think we had that. I'm trying to think which that we thought we might get hit with the storm. I can't remember. The traffic was backed up from the Sagamore Bridge all the way, like, past Orleans.
That must have been Hurricane Edward.
Maybe, yes, 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 exactly.
Yeah, that was Labor Day 1996.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what created... the day before Labor Day, I think, was Sunday.
Yes.
Sunday, the tremendous, you know, backups and so on. I think that's been getting better. I mean, the problem is you don't want to issue them so early that your confidence as a forecaster is not great enough, and then you wind up warning people and they didn't have to be warned.
Right.
But of course, you are able with our better forecasting models and technology. I mean, the models are getting better because we could put better initial data into it, as I mentioned, and the faster computing process of power allows us to run them more frequently, and any run of the model is quicker than it used to be. So I think the idea now is about 48 hours for a watch, 24 hours for a warning, always trying to, you know, do as well as you can to give as much lead time as you can, because obviously preparations occur. Preparations themselves are always costly, so you don't want to do them if they're not necessary, obviously. But that's getting better. The lead time is, you know, getting better over time because of better, you know, accuracy. But, you know, always remember that, especially with hurricanes, you know, the area that really, really is hardest hit, relatively speaking, is not that large, much larger, of course, than something like a tornado. But, you know, you don't want to overwarn, you don't want to underwarn, but obviously you need to have people prepared.
Right.
For a potential, such a major event. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Let's talk to Ginny, who's giving us a call from Martha's Vineyard. Hi, Ginny.
Good morning. I have two things, one of which with my grandfather was Joseph E. House, and he grew up in Tarpaulin Cove back in the 1890s. His father was his brother was the customs house officer there, and they worked for the Forbeses. He always said that following the opening of the Cape Cod Canal, weather patterns changed enormously, and that the worst of the storms in general, not necessarily hurricanes, go to the west of the canal, which, in my experience of living on the vineyard for all my life, is that's pretty well much true. And I wondered if they could comment on that. And the second thing was, you're talking a lot about weather predictions and weather expected, et cetera, which can be very dicey and certainly has improved a lot since 1938. But there's two things. There's a wonderful video, which was done by, Everett S. Allen, mm-hmm. wrote A Wind to Shake the World, which was about the 1938 hurricane. He also did a lengthy video, which you can find online if you look really hard. And the whole lead up to the 1938 hurricane, such as it was, which wasn't much, but then as it swept across Watch Hill and up the coast, et cetera, and across Providence, was very illuminating, and it's very frightening to watch as well. It's just an amazing video. The third thing is E.B. White, the Dean of American Writing, really, wrote a short story which was called In the Eye of Edna, and that was about waiting for Edna, and it was written as an essay, which was all about waiting for the hurricane, which I listen to every October because or September, because I like listening to it, and it's so interesting. Yeah. It hasn't changed much as you listen to the radio forecast.
Yeah, Ginny, thank you for that. I'm wondering about the comments Ginny made about the weather west of the canal. Anybody have thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think the point is that if you're anywhere on the south side of the Cape, there's no question that a storm that's tracking from south to north, the storm itself, and passing to your west, the counterclockwise flow is from the south, and that's where the ocean is. So that's why the forward motion of the storm is south to north, the wave action is south to north, and the forward motion of the storm compounds that, adds to it. So that's why that is the worst case scenario for Buzzards Bay, a storm that is moving from south to north, and the center is passing west of us, as did the hurricane of 38, as did most of the bad tropical storms and hurricanes. Now, if you're on the east side of the Cape or you're on the bay side of the Cape, then it's a different story. The ones that act more like nor'easters, where your wind is not coming from south to north, but coming from the northeast, okay? That's a whole different thing. And then actually, that's where they get it the worst that way, a storm that's tracking a little farther east. So that's why the blizzard of 78, Chatham had a wind gust to 93 miles an hour. So that's hurricane force winds, along with, you know, a super powerful, you know, nor'easter. And of course, the perfect storm, which was only 2 months after Hurricane Bob, at the end of October in 1991, that had something really unusual. The actual storm was moving from east to west, from our ocean to the east to the west, and passing just south of us. And so that left the whole east and north facing parts of Cape Cod so vulnerable, because they now had the momentum of the storm from east to west and the wind and wave action from east to west all compounding each other. And that's the just absolutely monumental waves from that perfect storm.
Yeah, that perfect storm took some folks certainly by surprise, for sure, right? I mean, and wasn't there some issues with some of the weather, you know, buoys or something? Wasn't that made it harder to predict? Or
trying to remember that. I mean, it was that the pattern was so bizarre. Mm. There were three different weather systems interacting in a very blocked up weather pattern, because, you know, weather's supposed to move from west to east most of the time. You know, and to a component sometimes south to north, but from east to west, the actual storm itself, not the wind direction, but the storm coming from the east to the west, that's like your toilet backed up.
Yeah.
It's what we call retrogression.
Yeah.
And only very, very strong blocking patterns in the atmosphere, just mess the whole jet stream up.
Yeah.
And this is what happened there. That's quite a rare combination of events. There also was a tropical storm, a Hurricane Grace involved, blocking high pressure to the north, and another system. There were three systems, and the way they interacted in a very block pattern resulted in the storm actually coming from east to west as it approached us, and that's what's so unusual.
Yeah, so you're just explaining why it's so complicated, right? Why sometimes the weather, they go, why do they get it wrong? You know, it's like there's so much that goes into it. I'm wondering your thoughts, Harvey, on tornadoes. I mean, that was something we didn't really see very often. It seems like we're seeing them a little more often. And honestly, I mean, the hurricanes think, okay, they impact a bigger area, but, you know, you sort of know they're coming. A tornado, it could touch down my house or my neighbor's house. I mean, you never really know where that's going to touch down. That's really hard to prepare for.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's a whole different thing, because it can do all its damage in like 1 to 2 minutes. Literally, doesn't last long, is more localized, but of course can be devastating. And I think what we're seeing is this. We always knew, and that's why Cape Cod was not as worried about tornadoes as perhaps an area between Worcester, Lowell, and Springfield. Okay? In other words, you'd get a cold front approaching from the west, a very strong cold front, a lot of support in the upper atmosphere, big disturbance. And when it hits at the right time of day, meaning mid to late afternoon in the warm time of the year, maximum heating, that's when you get severe thunderstorms and the risk of embedded tornadoes. Cape Cod being cooler, because the wind probably is, at least to some degree, making it cooler than it is in central and western Mass. Those storms would weaken to some extent and not likely be tornadic if they even reach the Cape, because many of them don't. But we're also seeing now, because we're getting warmer, and you may all also notice more humid, how humid Absolutely. It can be for stretches in the summer now. This is all mm-hmm. part of the trend toward warmer and more humid conditions. Well, all of that higher humidity is actually enabling a little bit of a different circumstance of tornadoes forming. We usually think of them ahead of cold fronts, but they can form along or just on the warm side of a warm front. And we're finding that situation has happened sometimes down here on the Cape in recent years. So whether it's a mini cycle or more something that's now becoming a part of our climate that we could expect, usually small spin-ups, that type of a situation usually. But still, a tornado is a tornado. Yeah. That's a severe storm, obviously. Yeah. So yes, I think we are noticing that. We also have better detection. And so what I mean is, back in the 90s, when we went to the next generation of radars, Doppler radars, where we now can see the wind direction and speed in the rain clouds, most of the warnings for a tornado now, because rotation has been detected on radar. Now, that's usually a few thousand feet above the ground. So maybe roughly half of them will wind up being tornadoes that touch the ground. Half of them may not. But even the ones that don't are still likely producing at least a strong to severe thunderstorm, which in itself could do damage.
Yeah, fascinating. Just about a minute and a half, Don. I'm just wondering, you know, there was so much material. I'm sure you know, when you're sourcing this book and you got all these great photos, how did you decide? I'm sure there was a lot more photos and things and information you could have put in this book.
Absolutely.
Was it tough to edit it down to?
Yeah, I got to a point where I had to start eliminating some little tidbits here and there, and even some photographs. Mm-hmm. It was just so much. I mean, especially on the Blizzard of 78, for example, I have unbelievable amounts of photographs.
You could do a whole book storm. Just with pictures.
You know, and that crossed my mind. Some of these storms, I think I could have done individual books, like mm-hmm. I did with the Portland Gale. It could very well have happened that way, yeah. But I thought the best way to do this for this particular book, put them all together.
Yeah, and so you have another one you're working on now?
Well, I'm still looking ahead right now, okay. But I've got several in the... Several on the back burner, and one of them might be rum running during Prohibition.
Ooh, okay. We'll keep our eye open for that. Don Wilding's author of the new book, Historic Storms of Cape Cod, and meteorologist Harvey Leonard. Thank you both so much for being here. It's always fun to talk about weather, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Harvey. Thanks, Don.
My pleasure.
Thanks.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.